Hello, and thank you for joining us today on State of Our Workforce. Each month, we will take a journey together into the heart of workforce innovation and explore how to build an equitable workforce. My name is Michelle Wilson. I am the Director of Evaluation and Learning at the National Fund. I am super excited to be joined by Natasha Hale, Project Lead for Workforce Grantmaking in Native Nations and Communities at Workforce Matters. Hello, Natasha.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks
for having me. Natasha and I were just, we meet before we go live and kind of bat around ideas and what we're thinking about. And we were in some really, we were in a deep discussion and we had to cut to come here. So some of that may show up here, but we agreed that we would just kind of follow this flowing path and let the conversation emerge as we think about how we want to talk about something so meaty in 20 minutes. And so Natasha has been like, yeah, let's do it. So here we are. I want to start with the work that you're doing, and I want you to talk a little bit about this funder's guide. It's a long title. I'm sorry, my words are not with me today, but if you just repeat the title of the guide and tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll dig in from there.
Cool. Thanks, Michelle. Well, a little bit. I lead the work at Workforce Matters, which is I lead our Native Nations work at Workforce Matters. So it's Workforce Matters is a national network of grant makers, and we really draw on the expert and practitioner knowledge to strengthen workforce development philanthropy so that it empowers workers, learners, job seekers to realize their full potential. And really, we're working to dismantle inequities based on race, gender, ability, and really advance education and employment outcomes for youth and adults. And a couple of years ago, the team launched a call for racial equity applications, and there was an overwhelming response from Indian country. And so our team began organizing ourselves around like, okay, well, we got all of this interest, and how do we understand the state of affairs within Indian country? And so we created this guide, and of course it has like a long name because we want it, that's what ends up happening when you create these guides, but it's Supporting Native Workforce Development, a guide for funders, but it's not just for funders. Like, we really took this to community leaders, you know, tribal practitioners, Native folks who have dedicated their whole lives to strengthening workforce development initiatives, and really wanted to make sure that we synthesize and gave an overview of what's happening in an Indian country around Native workforce. Like, what are the policies, the historical policies that led us to where we're at today? What's working and not working? What does it mean to define a successful Native workforce? And what we found consistently is that that is rooted in a vision of, you know, we want strong Native nations, strong tribal governments. We want to create economies that make sense for who we are and our identity. And so if you look at all the successful Native workforce development programs, like, they've designed programs around like preserving language, you know, like responding to the needs of workers by understanding the conditions that have been really difficult for them, like communities that are in rural areas. Like, how do we design and construct programs in a way that we rethink the design of the whole system delivery? Like, how are we doing and designing this work and service to our Native communities? And a lot of our workforce, workforce programs define, they call, you know, they don't call workers. That's not how they talk about people from their community. They call them our relatives. And so what is it going to look like to be able to take care of each other? And so it's been, and that guide, we worked a lot really closely with the National Congress of American Indians and some of the data they had about how, what does it mean to define Native workforce development? And, you know, Michelle, you've done work in metrics, and what are the right questions we should ask about success? Like, what does success look like? And how do we design the right metrics and ask the right questions to know if we're succeeding? And so rather than being at performance based on outsiders' metrics, like, what does success mean and how do we define that? Right. That's the wellness of workers. It's the wellness of our families. It's, you know, a lot of pride in our culture. And so those are sort of the things when we're even looking at our different partners, like, they're examining that really carefully to make sure we're asking the right questions. So Sure. That was a mouthful, but.
Yes, I mean, and you said a lot that I would love to dig into in the time that we have. So I want to start, well, one of the things that just kind of you mentioned around preserving language, some of the work that we did around our worker research, language justice, that's a form of language justice. Language justice, we've done work on that too, has, like, that's popped up a lot, particularly when you think about if we're in the business of advancing workforce equity, how do you not take into consideration language justice, right? And the place-based work that needs to happen to support that. And so what I'm hearing you say that the guide gives some, well, there's guidance around how you should think about this, what questions you should be asking. That's just one example. My takeaway in terms of if we were to dig into that guide, what we would learn from it. How does something like language justice in tribal communities, how do funders respond to that? I mean, is that like, yes? I mean, where do you have support? Like, yeah, we can support that. Well, we're not. Like, what does that look like? Does that make sense? Is that a fair question?
It does make sense. And I think this is where funders, and you have to think about the term of like workforce, right? If you think about like the term of workforce, and those of us who do work in economies know that this economy is built on a system of capitalism, which is very extractive, right? And so, you know, when we're thinking, I think funders and others, like, we're not just here to do labor for somebody else so that they can, you know, amass wealth, right? Like, workforce is about like creating and strengthening for Native nations, like communities that are rooted in culture, that are rooted in a vision to each Native nation about what they want to, for what makes sense with them. So language is something. If you go to tribal nations, like, your tribes will all, like, almost always care about language preservation, water, land, seed saving. Like, there's a consistency in what Native nations really care about. And so, you know, you have communities that are saying, okay, we want to preserve Native language. And so how do we build a workforce around that? How do we train up workers and use the WIOA funding and other funding to be able to do that in a way that's going to make sense for us versus thinking about it for industry or outside groups that are finding, you know, want to get job placement? It's like that doesn't work for us. We want to create an economy that's going to build on what we see as most valuable. So, like, language is a huge part of that. And so what does it look like to design a workforce around language? Like, we have all of these incredible workers that go to school and get a PhD and they create a curriculum, but how do we use these federal agency dollars and get sort of private funding from philanthropy to like make that happen, right?
Yeah. So this brings to mind for me, like, our current national climate around the rollback of equity initiatives, right? Mm-hmm. And so nobody knows better than Indian land what that's like. What's your sense of how are you all thinking about it in the face of where we are now, right? Is that a fair question?
It's a fair question. And I think, you know, I mean, I think one thing is that, like, Native nations have always sort of faced the hostility of federal government and state governments. Like, we've always had to, I think people are sort of, you know, awakened in this moment that all of these things are happening that are working against us, but there's always been efforts to undermine and Indian country and to take away, like, we've always had to fight for what we want, what we know is rightfully ours. And so I feel confident that our tribal nations are going to figure out how to organize themselves in response to what's going to happen in this new administration. I think there's always going to be efforts to undermine tribal sovereignty, to be able to, you know, take power away. And so those are things that I think are not going to be new. We've seen all those tactics, but it's going to be a disruption, right? Like, every time there's different administrations, it's like, how do we advocate for language and policy shifts that's going to be able to give us more self-determination as Native nations? And then we have nonprofits doing good work too, but it's always, so I think there's going to be, and I think everyone's thinking about this, all of this is going to be dismantled. And so how do we just sort of hold things down now and, like, not have it be completely disintegrated in a way? Like, how do we sort of hold the line right now? And I think I don't know if that's helpful, Michelle.
No, it is helpful. I mean, because what we know to be true is that communities who are on the historical end of oppression know how to hunker down, right? Like, there's this ability to hunker down.
And how to organize,
And how to organize and those things. But I'm also curious about what does allyship look like in this space of hunkering down? I keep asking if all these are fair questions because I feel like I'm also in a learning space around this as well too. Like but particularly from workforce development. So and against the backdrop of or in conjunction with this plan or goal to build an economy for India. Like, we want to build an economy that looks like us, that's for us, that's by us, almost like the FUBU, right, of Indian country, for us, by us, right? And so is there a role for allyship? Is that under consideration, or is it just like, no, right now we're just like in this FUBU space?
There's always that role. And I think it's all, you know, the way the system works now is it's fragmented with limited funds. Mm-hmm. It's a performance-based system that's underfunded. I mean, you know, we've had Black and Brown communities point this out before. We have immigrant communities point this out. We have Native Nations. The thing that's different with Native Nations is that we have a political relationship with the state and the feds that other groups don't have.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be a push from our Native Nations to be able to, like, assert our sovereignty. And then you also have, you know, and also tribal governments, you know, they need to be, they're like any other government, they need to be pushed to be creative. So you have folks working in the nonprofit sector that are trying to figure out how do we sort of align forces, right? Because we're all sort of saying that we need something that's designed to be responsive to our communities, that is not going to continue to take from them, but is designed around, you know, how the unique challenges that they face, whether that's language barriers, whether that's transportation, whether that's going to be digital divide. Like, there's a lot of issues that, you know, Native, Black, Brown, and immigrant communities can organize ourselves around. I mean, it's a lot harder, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to be able to do that. But you do have some interesting collaborations that are happening to be able to push, like, state, local workforce boards to do better, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something that's really going to test us, not just within workforce, but, like, what does this mean about how we're organizing cross-racially? Mm-hmm. Like, how do we do that better? And, you know, when systems are aligned to, like, always undermine those efforts, but, like, I think it's really going to test, it's going to test us in this moment again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really interesting. And I appreciate that. And I agree with you 100%. So going back to the guide, we were talking about a couple of things that you mentioned. Language was the other piece. Mm-hmm. But there's also, again, I'm going back to this, what does it look like to build an economy for us? We had a conversation with one of our collaboratives in Hawaii, and they were talking about how they redesign some job quality initiatives that really took into consideration culture and how people communicate and how families are aligned, whether, you know, matrilineal, patrilineal, and what that means for the community, right? And they did some really innovative, seems innovative, but very natural, like, this is what it means to do this work. It's innovative for us to think about that. And what I hear you saying around relationships, it's not workers, it's relatives, and those, that, in my mind, it feels like to accept that, it's not even about acceptance, that frame, there has to be some deconstruction in terms of how we think about, which is always around, like, the decolonizing of how we think about these things in ways that allow us to hold the reality of what is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's always important to look at sort of, like, you know, that history also. I mean, you think about, you know, there was a whole boarding school era, you know, which has gotten, and I bring that up because it's gotten some recent attention, but it was a whole system designed to remove Native children thousands of miles from their homelands and basically train them to be domestic workers and industrial workers. And so, you know, there's been sort of a reclaiming of history and sort of reparations around around all of that, all those historical policies that have undermined Native nations, and not just the Native nations, you know, but like other communities as well. And so thinking about, you know, there's always this tension around, you know, wanting employers want to get, you know, something at the, you know, cheapest price possible versus workers want the most, right? There's always this tension. And so, but how do we sort of redesign and reconstruct our thinking as a society, which is like a tall order, that people should be able to just do work and be happy and feel safe and like feel like their values are in the places that they go to every day. Mm-hmm. And their values are reflected in their leadership. Like, these are basic things we expect in the culture of a workplace. Like, but we're thinking about people that have been historically marginalized. Like, how are we thinking about, how do we help them to organize themselves in a way, like they already know what they want, but how is philanthropy responsive to that? How do we get like the feds as a system when this whole system, right, was designed not to do that? Like, and it, I think for me, where I'm seeing it has to be place-based and local shifting, right? That's where I see sort of the most creativity coming out of any sort of like Native workforce or even like local workforce. Like, it really has to come from the communities, and there really has to be sort of a system set up for that engagement as well. I mean, it's going to cost more, but it's also like, that's reparations money.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I think I appreciate the comment about reparations, because so often people think of it as a monetary one-for-one exchange, and really reparations shows up in many different ways in terms of doing that. We have about 4 minutes left, and I want to, there are a couple of things, just to give you a highlight so you can think. I want to talk about what's got you excited about moving forward, or you can choose to say what concerns you. I want you to lean into that. But I also want to spend a little bit of time talking about if you could give a detailed example about a successful partnership that you guys are excited about in uplifting Native workers in their community. Where do you, for instance, again, because we've been talking about the language justice, do you have a good example of how that's reshaping in a particular community or efforts around that and what that looks like?
Yeah, there's some interesting work happening in the Pueblos in New Mexico, where they're really trying to organize themselves around like, what does language preservation look like, and how does that get sort of built into how they're drawing funds from like federal agencies. So there's some really cool work there. You have like, you know, there's all of these funds that are coming out now to support training in solar development, right? And so you have like, there's a lot of cool projects happening around like Native youth, right? Because that's a huge demographic in Native communities. So like, they're getting training on how to install solar energy. So there's like green tech internships. Like, one of them is in McGeezy. It's a nonprofit out of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so that's like also a really cool program that's happening. And you have folks who are doing like media programs also, or like, how is it that they're building a cultural context into how they do all of their work and talk about, you know, sort of connections to place, to land, and like sort of coming with that context and how they're thinking about economy. So there's some really cool work that's happening out there. And part of what we're trying to do as a team is to, one, bring in more funders, but also to understand like there's so much possibility happening in Indian country. I mean, it's really cool to see sort of this resurgence. We're sort of in this resurgence again, where we're starting to see Native people just in all places. Like, there's visibility to Native people, which hasn't always been there. And so I think people are paying attention, and there's so many cool things that are happening right now in around economic initiatives in Indian country.
So if we brought you back next year for a longer conversation, and should you want to engage with us in a longer conversation, what would you want to talk about?
I would want to talk about, you know, how much the Native workforce initiatives have grown, how funders being responsive to what's possible in Indian country. I would want to talk about like how there's more jobs being created around responding to climate change initiatives around like plants. Like, we have a lot of young people now that are like really worried and thinking about like climate change. And this is something that's always been on the mind of like Native nations. You know, tribal governments are writing climate change plans. Like, how do we build an economy and on a workforce that is like seeing sort of all of those shifts. And so, I don't know, I think it would be really cool to see, you know, like highlight all of the incredible work that's happening.
Okay. So you'll come back for a longer conversation next year.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Fantastic. We are at time. Again, this is an opportunity to just kind of lay the groundwork and kind of get the juices flowing around how we think about Indian country and learn a few things, pique our interest. But of course, we never have enough time. So I want to thank you.
It went by so fast. Thanks so much.
It does go by so fast. I really want to thank you for joining us today. I look forward to continuing the conversation next year. I want to thank everyone who joined us, who joined the audience on LinkedIn. Please make sure to follow the National Fund on LinkedIn to stay up to date with all the latest on the state of our workforce. Make sure you tune in next month. We will do our final Anthropology of Work series, our final edition of Anthropology of Work series next month. You can find this conversation on any of your favorite streaming platforms. You can also reach out to Natasha. We will follow up. I think Josh says if you have the link to the guide, we will put it here. If not, we can make it available on our YouTube, and we can promote that on our Instagram and all of our other socials. Thank you, Natasha, for joining us. I appreciate you for taking the ride with me today. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Michelle. Really enjoyed our conversation before and this quick 20-minute conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. See you later.
State of Our Workforce, Where Are We Now? Is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Josh Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce on our website at www.nationalfund.org. State of Our Workforce is also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you may listen. State of Our Workforce airs live monthly on LinkedIn. Follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to get updates about the next live recording of State of Our Workforce.